Welcome to Important, Not Important. My name is Quinn Emmett.
Is it? My name is Brian Colbert Kennedy.
You know, that's what they... they told me that's what my name was. Welcome to episode 18. And today we're talking to the great Dr. Phil Plait. Man, the bad astronomer. He is an astronomer, an author, science communicator extraordinaire. And we're talking about rebuilding the foundations of American science.
And where does it start?
Enthusiasm.
It starts with enthusiasm.
Yeah, science.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, man. Anyways, this one's awesome. It's nerdy.
Super nerdy.
Fun. Angry. Excited. It's great. We're very thankful that Phil spent that time with
us. Pretty awesome. He is a goofball and I loved it. It was a very, very fun combo.
I'm super into it. Goofball who knows more than
a lot.
So much. So many things.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on with the store?
Store's killing it. Everything's great. Important, not important. .com/store.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Whatever. I'm wearing the new shirt.
New t-shirt. People love it. Everyone's asking questions. They go, what does that say? And then you tell them and they go, I'm going to do that. And then they go, I'll download the podcast. You go, no, do it now.
Just right now. I'll stand right here.
Do you
and
have
wait.
Your phone? Because the answer is you do.
Definitely do.
Open up their thing. It's built in.
It's so easy.
That's okay. And you just download it for them. It's like how you used to give people your phone number. Now you take their phone, then you just put your phone number.
Yeah, and you just add
in.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just go in and subscribe.
Take
to the
people's
podcast.
Phones
and subscribe to the podcast. Just people you don't know. They will appreciate it, and then the world won't die. It's going great. Pick up some summer gear. And we're coming up on a few other things, aren't
we? Yeah, the summer is going to be exciting.
Like issue 100 of the newsletter.
Insanity.
That's
I can't
crazy.
Believe that.
So many words. So many words, but our SEO people say that's a good thing.
I know what SEO means.
What does it mean?
Security enforcement officer.
That's we have people that do
we
that.
We have that. We're very important
that's
and people
Teddy.
Follow us around.
That's Teddy.
Yeah, it's Teddy.
Look, Teddy.
Well, Ted.
Teddy, kill.
He literally has like the cutest sticker stuck to his hair fur.
Life with toddlers.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Anyways, we got summertime coming up. Very exciting. Again, not trying to make this too timely, but we've got some cool stuff coming up.
Yeah, no, we're just excited, and so we want to talk about it. That's all.
Teddy's doing great.
He's such a cutie. I'm always so much happier when he's here. Not that I'm not happy when it's just me and you, but when he's here, it's like an extra level of excitement and happiness.
So how pumped was he to see you on your motorcycle?
I know, that was so great. Usually people don't recognize me through my helmet, Teddy does.
Yeah, he's smarter than that. He's smarter than people, generally. What else is going on? Again, not to get too timely, but this is kind of what it's all about. Brian, we got some primaries happening.
We sure do.
Mm-hmm.
Currently and so, and upcoming.
Traditionally, America, you don't participate in primaries.
Yeah, real
even
hideous
less
turnouts.
Than regular voting, which is shocking and difficult to do. But this is it, Brian. It's fucking starting.
Yeah, this now, is like for real what we need to do.
So what we literally honestly. What we've been building up to, this is what's starting. It's not just November 6th. We got to put the people in the right position.
Nothing's going
to
change if we don't do anything.
November 6th. Please, people, get informed. Get out there and just please vote. Use your voice. Use your vote. It's in the Constitution. For some of you, they've been trying to take that away for quite a while.
Long time.
Or you didn't have it at first because you're a particular color or gender.
Now you do, so maybe take advantage of it. I don't know.
Please, let's do it. Check out... places like 314 Action.
Yep.
Find candidates near you who understand science and reason and are ready to rebuild our fucking society on those principles, on evidence, on long-term concern for humanity and the planet's well-being. All those things go together.
Yeah, it's all connected.
This is it.
I feel like I speak for other people. I'm certainly saying this for me and I speak for others. Like often the reasons I was not involved in this is because I felt like I didn't know. And it's easier than ever to find out anything you want to find out now.
So hard not to know.
If there's think of an issue that you think is important and you're passionate about, go look up who is running where you live and agrees with you. And then just go fucking vote for them.
Right. Please, please. And again, and we get into this a little bit today and we've talked about in other episodes, you're not going to agree with anybody on everything.
Right, right.
Especially these people running for office. They're pulled in so many different directions.
Yeah.
But there's a few things that we can't escape from that are kind of important that if you could just find a way, whatever your values are,
right.
to settle with them on that, and then we'll get to the other stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. We're not going to fix all of the problems
no.
right now.
And you're not going to agree on everything. That's the way it works, especially in a broken two-party system.
Right.
However, there's a few things like putting science and evidence-based decision-making back into the the houses and the positions in the institutions right. that decide for our country and have a heavy influence on the world. We need those people in there.
Yeah.
And then we'll deal with everything
else. Let's start there.
On that note, let's go talk to Phil.
We should talk to Phil.
Because he's got some shit to say. Let's do this.
Bye.
Our guest today is the bad astronomer, Phil Plate. And together we're going to discuss building a flexible, approachable, and fun new science foundation in America. Phil, welcome.
Thanks.
Phil, tell us real quick who you are and what you do.
Who I am is Phil. That grammar came out a little odd. My name is Phil Plate. I am an astronomer, classically trained with a PhD and all that nonsense. And over the years, I have become more of a science communicator. I don't do research so much anymore, but I do love science and I love talking about science. I like talking about not just the science itself, but how we do it, why it's important, how it's affected by politics, all of that stuff. And I've been doing that now, for a long time. Oh, my. you know, I've written books and I got a blog and I do TV shows and all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
That's awesome, man. We have seen, and we're going to talk about this a lot, you know, a growing prevalence of folks of the scientifically minded slash educated slash doctored like yourself that have taken it upon themselves either more recently this year to either become more of a communicator to just straight up run for office.
We've yeah.
talked a bunch of those folks. Or folks like you said have been doing it for quite a while and have sort of galvanized this movement of taking advantage of new technologies and interest to hopefully build science enthusiasm and defend real science across the world.
Yeah. So let's set up our conversation for today. Phil, we're big believers in questions that promote action. Mm-hmm. We want to get to the bottom of today's, you know, topic so that everybody actually really gets it. And then because these times call for action, formulate some steps that we can take and all of our listeners can take to hopefully make a little dent in the world.
Does that sound good?
Yes.
Awesome. So Bill, we start with one important question that kind of gets to the heart of why you're here today. And again, that's both on the podcast and existentially. So instead of saying like, tell us your life story, we like to ask, Phil, why are you vital to the survival of the species?
I'm not.
So quick.
We get that quite a bit.
You need anything else?
why do you get out of bed in the morning?
As I wake up. These are easy questions.
Going to be like this. No, next, what's your favorite color?
I have a daughter and she is over 21. So my usefulness as a human, as far as my DNA goes, is done. We're gone. I'm just riding on inertia at this point. But I'm hoping to help the world. That sounds more grandiose maybe than it deserves, but I'm trying to make the world a better place on my own by telling people about science. And honestly, a lot of folks have the wrong idea about it. What I want to convey is that the natural world is really cool. Mm-hmm. It doesn't care what we believe politically or religiously or anything like that. It's going to keep doing what it's doing. We need to be aware of it. We need to understand it. We need to have the right tools to process this information, predict the consequences of our own actions and what's going on around us so that we can continue to make this planet habitable and our species viability ensured for as long into the future as we can.
I love it. See, that wasn't so hard.
You're supposed to be here, Phil. See?
Not for you. You just listen to it. I had actually say that stuff.
And this is a total sidetrack, talking about all the different things you've done among your many multimedia contributions from books to TV shows and such. We learned you were an advisor on the movie Arrival, yes?
Vaguely, yes.
I, as a nerd and my primary gig is a screenwriter, I loved that movie and thought Eric did a phenomenal job adapting it to the screen. I was just curious your experience and involvement on that.
Awesome film.
Well, yeah, I really like the movie too. It's a good flick, and I do enjoy time travel when it's handled well, mm-hmm. or in a way where you're watching it going, what am I watching? And it takes you a little while to figure it out. I love that kind of thing.
Sure.
The entire story of how I got involved with it is long and complicated, but in the end, I saw a version of the script. It wasn't quite final yet, and they asked me for my opinion on it. And I sent a page of notes into this to the company, the production company, basically. And most of it was fairly vague, describing the aliens and maybe how they think and how they move, given that they're symmetric. For those of you who haven't seen the movie, this is going to make no sense. Just go watch the movie.
Yeah, plug your ears.
But what the one contribution, and this is so ridiculous, Jeremy Renner's character is a scientist.
Uh-huh.
And when they tell him about the aliens, and he asks, you know, are they sending us any information? Are they trying to communicate with us? And he says, have they sent us any Fourier series? And the Fourier series isn't like a series of numbers. It's not like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a mathematical process that you use to analyze signals, images, sounds, things like that. And so what he meant was like a series of numbers that they could have sent us as a way of, you know, universal communication.
Decoder ring.
Basically, yeah. And so I changed that. I said, I wanted to keep it something that started with F. So I said, how about the Fibonacci series, which is a series of numbers. And you can look that up. There's all kinds of things that go on with that. And it's reproducible in nature, but it's not the kind of thing you would expect a signal to be comprised of. Nobody would send a series of numbers in the Fibonacci sequence. So that would be a way of them saying, hey, we're here, we're intelligent, we have math, and this is going to be the basis of how we understand each other. So that was literally my contribution to the movie, is I changed one word that Jeremy Renner says.
Well, that's exciting.
But it, you know, got my name in the credits. So,
yeah.
Hey.
That's
that
awesome,
was very
man.
Cool. You know, it's also very silly, but there you go.
Hey, look, man, you know, there's this, maybe you've heard of it. There's this great organization called the Science and Entertainment Exchange, which is so amazing and doesn't get enough play. It's basically this organization of scientists that have volunteered to essentially help out screenwriters to make science in entertainment better.
Accurate.
You know, storytelling is always going to have to take precedence in the very end. And a lot of times it's not up to the screenwriter or director. But, you know, for the screenwriters out there that haven't, or aspiring writers of any sort that haven't heard of it, check it out. And we thank all the scientists that volunteer their time. It's amazing. You can literally email them and say, hey, I got a question on, you know, astronomy. And they'll say, cool, we've got a couple people that could talk to you. And they'll help you work over your story, and it's great. And we appreciate contributions like that.
I will second that. I've been working with them since literally their inception.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice. And in fact, that's how I got the Arrival gig. I was in LA, and they sometimes will, I'll visit the town, and for a day, the Science and Entertainment Exchange will arrange for me or someone else to visit production companies, writers, whatever, and talk to them about productions they're working on, or maybe ideas they have, something like that. And that's what happened. I actually was visiting a producer about a different script, but he was also involved with Arrival, and that's how I saw it.
Oh, that's so great. Well, I love to see
I love those
come
guys. They're great.
And you got one word in the movie. And
yeah,
that's
thanks for the
perfect.
Fibonacci
we'll take
series
it.
Line.
But hey, man, that,
well,
could,
in fact,
that could make or break
it. Yeah, well, in that case, no. But in some cases, you know, they'll say something and you'll go, oh, no.
Yeah, right.
And so what I love about the exchange, too, is that it's not just that they want to get the science right. They want the portrayal of scientists to be better.
Yes.
Oh. And I'm super excited about that. That's a really, really important, I might even say critical factor. When you look at the way scientists are portrayed, that can guide the public's attitude about science. It really
sure.
can. I mean, how many people watched a Marvel movie in the past 10 years?
A lot, right.
Probably
a lot of people.
Several.
Sure, sure.
Several people have done that. And when you look at the way scientists are portrayed in that movie, typically they're pretty good. They're funny, interesting.
Often heroic.
Yes. And heroic. Yeah. It's Bruce Banner is a warm human being.
Right.
Maybe Tony Stark isn't. but now I'm forgetting the guy's name, who's in the Thor movies, Skarsgård, Eric something, I can't remember. And I've been watching all the movies, so you know, so I could get ready for Infinity War.
Sure.
But I can't remember his name. But all of these characters, oh, and Jane Foster, right? Natalie Portman's character.
Yeah.
And so we have more women in these movies, more people of color in these movies. We have scientists who are human. And I love that so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Shuri, yeah, I don't know if you saw Black Panther yet, but,
yeah,
you know, Shuri's a revelation. I mean, that role in itself and their portrayal of her in that movie.
Yeah, she's great.
Might enable like a generation of women of color to become scientists. And that's incredible.
And that's not an exaggeration. You ask a lot of people, like me, scientists and nerds, what inspired them when they were a kid, and they'll give you answers like Star Trek.
100%.
And in my case, you know, it's not Next Generation because I'm older than that. it was the original series and reruns,
sure.
Lost in Space, Space 1999, which a lot of people haven't even heard of
Space
nowadays.
Space 1999.
It was a huge show in the 1970s. Those shows inspired me, and the scientists on those shows inspired me. Now, a lot of the scientists look like me, white guys,
sure.
Basically. But now we're getting more diversity. We're seeing people who look like other people, and I love it. I don't want to throw away right away half the population by not encouraging women to be interested in science. And when I was a kid, that was not something that was done. Now it is.
Yep.
I mean, the encouragement, not the discouragement. And a movie like Black Panther, come on, it was a huge movie. It's got a lot of representation in it for African Americans, and that's wonderful. There's so many people out there who may not, they don't have to become scientists, but if they're inspired to learn more about science,
that's some interest.
They see somebody like them who's, it doesn't have to be science, just seeing people who are enthusiastic about learning, people who are enthusiastic about technology.
Yeah.
That's all wonderful. That's all inspiring.
And, yeah, we'll take it.
I think the world in 15, 20 years, hopefully, is going to be a lot different than what it was when I was a kid.
Yeah, you hope so. And you know, on the other side, you know, similar representation was Hidden Figures, where I think a lot of people, that movie did so well and it was so well done. And I think a lot of folks looked at it and went like, I didn't even know that story existed.
Right.
I didn't know those women were real or that was possible. And hopefully similarly, it makes them go like, well, shit. Why isn't that possible for me? Like I could do that. You know, those women did it in much more difficult circumstances.
Yeah.
And yes, they were incredibly smart, but they, you know, they were portrayed as they were, which was also incredibly driven. And
just as interesting to me is how we don't have celebrated stories about women like that until now, or we didn't have them until now. When I was a kid, no way would I have seen any stories about them in the newspapers or in the news or in movies, really, especially as a you know white kid living in the suburbs, but also in just that time, that era.
Sure.
And now we're seeing lots of stuff like that. And the idea that there were women astronauts training at the same time the men, but you didn't hear about those stories at the time.
Weird.
I lived through the Apollo era. I was really, really young, but I watched Apollo 11 and I actually saw the Apollo 15 launch. We went to Florida and I stood there and watched it.
Wow.
Fucking awesome.
So yeah, it was Saturn V was amazing. And I can't wait to see some of these SpaceX and Blue Origin rockets, these big ones.
Oh no, the big ones that are coming. Like I'm 100% bringing my children to them. It's just, it will change your life. I saw one space shuttle launch and I was like, oh, well that changed my life. I didn't become a scientist because I'm not nearly smart enough, but oh my God, what it can do to you.
There's still something about it.
It's not that I want to drive 80% of the population to get PhDs in science. We can't, we don't have the grant money for that.
no shit.
But just having people, woman I know on Twitter, I've never actually met her in real life. She's an astronomer as well, was just tweeting about this today saying, it's not that we want everybody to become scientists. We want everybody to become appreciative of science, to learn how to think critically, to analyze evidence, come to conclusions, to be able to say, hey, is what I'm thinking right or not? Maybe it's not.
Right.
And what does the evidence show?
Yep.
And to be able to discern you know, garbage science from real science. And that is, right. I mean, not to get too political here, but you know, the reason we are in so much trouble right now, the reason Donald Trump is president is because people aren't looking at the evidence, I hate to say rationally, because that makes it sound like they're being ridiculous about it. It's no, they're the problem is they're looking at it emotionally, which sure. is in many cases a good way to look at life.
Sure.
But when you're making decisions and the evidence is like, this guy is a racist, xenophobic, misogynist, mm-hmm. you know, maybe that evidence is something you should be paying attention to.
Yeah, no shit.
Maybe.
Well, and it's not even just not looking at it rationally, but it's also being, you know, manipulated and played to their weaknesses.
Well, there's that as well. That, you know? Absolutely, there's that as well. You want to be able to look at the evidence critically. And when I right. say rationally, I mean rationally as opposed to emotionally, not sure. like the opposite of emotion. Sure. Just two different ways of looking at it. And you have to use your emotions to make decisions. You know, if you're going to buy a car or a house, I don't know, something like that, some big decision, you want to get something that's, you know, it's going to... Oh, this one has the best mileage and mm-hmm. its safety ratings are good. And you look at all that stuff rationally, that's great. But then you have to say, you know, am I going to enjoy driving this car?
Sure.
Is it, you know, is it going to be fun? Is it going to do what I need it to do? Is it going to satisfy me emotionally? That's a fine thing to do. If you have two things, all things being equal, and one of these decisions makes you happier than the other, then yeah, hey, you know, that's something to factor in. But if you're making a decision on whom I should elect for president,
right.
Certainly you need both of these things.
Yes.
Not just, you know, if somebody rubs me the wrong way for a lot of different reasons, even if I agree with them, that can make it more difficult for me to vote for them.
Sure.
I'm a human being. If somebody is if somebody's trying to convince me of something and they're calling me a jerk, and they're yelling at me and telling me I'm stupid and all that, I'm less likely to listen to them than if they're nice.
Sure, sure.
And so that's just being human. And so we have to consider that.
Yeah, you can't escape that.
Yeah, it's something we have to consider when we are listening to somebody, but also when we're talking to somebody. And that's, if you want to convince somebody of something, belittling them is generally not the best way to do it.
Yeah. And you know, we've had this, we had a little sort of trilogy of conversations with conservative climate activists who are real people that exist. And there's more than you
Catherine
think.
Hayhoe.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Just the best. We've got her coming up soon. And
good.
And part of their point was, and again, what we try to do with each of these is like build a point at the end of the episode where we can identify some actual actionable steps that people can take. And, you know, one of them was like, stay out of the way, let us do our job. You know, the messenger at times is more important than the message because nobody wants Greenpeace yelling at them anymore. That's not going to change their minds, you know, and just spitting facts at them. Often the story is and how it is told and how it is presented to appeal to their beliefs and wants and desires and values, as long as it's still grounded in the science, will make the biggest difference. Because like you said, nobody wants people yelling at them. It's going to make you turn off, no matter how big the implications are.
Yeah, before you even hear the message.
Yes.
All right, well, listen. So
I agree.
Yeah, we're going to come back to this stuff. Let's dig into it a little more. So again, we're going to set up a little context for today, a little segment we call Context 101 with Professor Brian, which is often off course, oversimplified, hopefully never wrong, but we've got a resident astronomer here to correct us.
Thank God.
Today,
we'll
you know,
right.
Again, some of our conversations have been digging into the science of carbon capture. We're not going to do that as much today. Right. You know, so it's less of a learning curve. It's more sort of the history of sort of science communication, and the tools and devices and audiences behind it for the past 25 years or so. So, Brian, go.
All right. So what are we doing today? We're setting up, you know, trying to figure out a way to build a new fun science foundation, and you know that happens in little bits all around, somewhere between the classrooms and you know, fucking around online at Khan Academy or Coursera. And there's a huge wave of fun you know, in informal ways to access every day, like on YouTube and Instagram. The physics girl we mentioned earlier, she's pretty awesome. There's all kind I fucking love science and Nat Geo and ASAP science, all kinds of fun stuff.
The National Geographic Instagram feeds, I tell everybody, are some of the best things you can possibly follow. And no one ever believes me. And then you go, oh my God, they're incredible.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Anyways, well, that's the stuff that gets people hooked, right? Little daily, little daily, like bite-sized reminders that science is awesome and inspiring and important and full of, what are those things?
Oh, facts?
Oh, yes, facts, yes. Right, which facts aren't cutting it, which is super fucking clear, so maybe pretty pictures will, and storytelling has to be a part of it. And that's why folks like Phil here are so attractive and meaningful, and yes, that's exactly how I meant it to come out.
You don't sound like a creep at all.
Again, I can't disagree with you.
Yeah.
Anyways. But in the classroom.
Right, there's the more formalized battle, right? In the classroom.
Yeah. Which is a totally another story. I mean, you know, the next generation is for sale. I mean, I guess the classroom has always been politicized
right.
from nuke threats and communism to our current existential threat, climate change.
Right.
And, you know, thank God for warriors like Don Dugenhaus, who wrote the new textbook, like literally wrote the new textbook for science in the classroom.
Episode 8.
So good. And, you know, who fights for objective, comprehensive coverage of things like climate change.
Right.
And the young people, the ones that actually are in the classrooms, who have basically said, fine, fuck it, I'll do it myself. You know, because adults are just failing us. Left right. Tonight.
Like Therese and Jay, we talked to with Don,
yeah.
who are, it's not necessarily I'll do it myself. It's like, fine, I'll carry this burden because you people have fucked it up so much and are trying to poison the classroom. And they go and sue themselves. The kids that are suing the federal and the state governments
yep.
over climate change, you know, and the parents, the awesome parents who let them do that.
Yeah,
right?
And support them.
So, and yeah, what's the question?
Well, you know, how do we inspire more and more of these people to love and embrace and champion science?
And I
know?
Think those are the levels, right? You got to think, hey, this picture from National Geographic is pretty cool. And
love
then you kind of get into science. Ugh. And then you start to champion science. And like Phil said, maybe you become a scientist, but we don't need everybody to become a scientist.
Yeah, but be enthused, be excited about it, talk
give a shit
about
it, right?
Yeah. You know, and for, you know, go from making it a part of, you know, your casual everyday life to perhaps grounding yourself in those facts we were talking about,
right?
And reasons, you know, and you know, to going into science yourself, maybe not everybody,
right.
Some of you.
Okay, so that's kind of a bare bone explanation of where we're going. So. Again, the topic is like, how do we help build a more flexible, and I think it's becoming more flexible and approachable and accessible and fun.
Yeah.
Because you can't just be yelled at Science Foundation in America. So, Phil, you've been championing real science, empirically proven science online and everywhere else, like you said, books since basically CompuServe, Prodigy, apparently, right?
Maybe before that. Yeah.
God, 3/4 of our audience isn't going to know what that noise is.
Isn't that
sad.
Weird?
I made a Oregon Trail joke the other day. A bunch of people didn't understand what
nobody
I was talking
about.
I was very sad. Anyways.
I have the opposite problem. I'm after that time.
Oh, wow. Well.
I should say before
like
that.
I mean,
by the
right,
time
right,
Oregon
right
Trail came out, I was already like in, you know, college, so.
So don't make any Oregon Trail jokes. You won't get it.
Okay. So I still won't make
it. Right. It was a really fun game, Phil.
It was very important.
You kids get off my trail.
Yeah, right? Phil died of dysentery. All right. So, I mean, look, you wrote a, I love it. You've done everything. You had a website back in the day ripping on unproven science. You've got your blog. You've got your fancy new newsletter that I love. You wrote a book. And again, it seems like everything has been from the perspective of like, hey, isn't science awesome? But the perspectives and the way you've attacked it, like the death from the skies is so great, right? It's hey, universe is inhospitable and doesn't give a shit about you and is probably going to kill us. But science is so cool.
You're referring, of course, to my Penguin book, Death from the Skies, available at booksellers
100%.
Online, brick and mortar stores all around.
Going right in the fucking show notes. And by the way, I actually never knew that you did a book with Zach Wienersmith. I just finished the book he just wrote with his wife, Soonish, which is so
sitting
great.
Sitting here in front of me.
Soonish is amazing.
It's so fantastic. I want to give it to everybody. But you guys wrote a book about nerds getting bullied and how to respond to them. That's amazing.
I wouldn't describe it that way. It's not like a...
I haven't read it. This is what I got off Amazon.
Oh, really?
I read Death from the Skies, but this was your description. And I was like, that's amazing.
No, it's not like that. It's actually, 128 nerd insults. They're basically yo mama jokes translated into what? Nerd speak.
Wait, that's
because,
amazing.
You know, because yo mama jokes are
perfect.
Not Holy cool cow. Anymore. Right. You know, they were never cool, but it's not the kind of thing you want to write now. So we turn them into, you know, if you're in some sort of like a, I don't know, East Coast, West Coast nerd throwdown.
Mm-hmm. Happens all the time. You know,
and so we put together 128 of these. Why 128? Because it's 2 to the 7th power.
Oh,
and
God.
64 wasn't enough, and 256 was way too damn many.
Sure, sure.
And it was just a lark. Zach started tweeting these things, and I was responding with more. And then we started chatting, and it's like, this would be a good book. So we did it.
I love it.
Did it ourselves. We self-published it.
Oh, that's awesome.
This is incredible.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, look, the point is, you're all over the internet.
And this is off the point. Yeah, a little bit off the Oregon Trail there. So
that's what we do is veer completely off course. The point is, you've been around the block, right?
How, a few times.
How has the landscape changed as someone who's been involved using proactively all the tools for all this time? How do you feel like sort of outreach and communication has changed, pros and cons, since you've been doing this up to now?
That's an interesting question. And your metaphor is interesting. The landscape hasn't changed at all. The path has changed. So what I mean by that is when I was a kid, you got your science by watching, you know, Nova on TV.
Sure.
You'd go to the library and check out books, or you'd have a science class taught by an actual science teacher, mm-hmm. which is a dying breed these days too. So that path, I guess, is still there, but we have all these other methods of delivering science now. We have a million cable channels, and a lot of them are dedicated to science, Discovery and Science, a few others.
Nat Geo.
And so that's one way. The internet, which is like a, I don't know, some sort of like a highway that's super in some way.
That's so,
but I mean,
if only we
but
could hang that down.
Yeah. I mean, the internet is such a broad term. We've got blogs and social media, streaming videos. There's a million ways, you know, podcasts, for example, of consuming science that didn't exist, of course, when I was younger. Having said all that, the landscape itself, and by that I mean the sort of the background, the attitudes about science, the people that you're trying to blaze this trail toward, I don't know if that's changed. A lot of surveys show that, I hate to use the word belief, but trust in science and scientists hasn't changed that much. The belief in anti-science may change a little bit. Horoscopes, you know, astrology, mm-hmm. Creationism, these sorts of things, they go up and down, but typically they fluctuate a little bit, but typically they hold relatively steady. There may be a rise locally in specific topics, like, for example, people who think the moon landings were faked. That had a huge spike in 2001 because Fox TV aired a terrible TV show about it. And then really? it was in the internet was young and this information spread like wildfire. But that's kind of fallen back down into a background noise. Right now you've got people who think the earth is flat. These folks, for whatever reasons they believe this, a lot of them are fringe religious types. I've seen some videos of some of the folks who are really beating the drum for this, and they're like biblical literalists, excuse me. One of them is a huge anti-Semite too. The more you dig into these folks,
checking all the boxes.
Yeah, it's really, really fascinating. This will pass. I'm not saying we just have to sit back and let it go.
No,
but I'm saying that in 10, 15 years, you know, we'll have moved on to some other dumb thing. Look at vaccines. Was sort of a background noise. People who thought vaccines were bad. And then Andrew Wakefield in England published this terrible article in a journal that was retracted. He was drummed off of the register in the UK.
Right, but once it's out there,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you find out about this guy too, he was huge conflict of interest. He was developing his own alternative vaccine.
Right.
The study he did was unethical. It just goes on and on and on. But that was a huge spike, and now we're dealing with this. So people who don't think the moon landings are real or think the Earth is flat, that's bad. And I'll get back to that in a second. But it's things that have a direct impact, like anti-vaxxers.
Sure. Know,
babies are dying.
Yeah.
Because of whooping cough.
Oh, we got into this. I have three young children who are very close in age. I brought a newborn baby home, and the next week my 1.5-year-old daughter got whooping cough. And we had to quarantine the entire house. And I already had such an issue with anti-vaxxers, and I pretty much lost my fucking mind.
Oh, I can imagine. I don't have to imagine. I mean, I'm a parent.
She's the lucky one.
Issues with my
daughter. She's the lucky one because a lot of kids are dying from it, and it's fucking insane. Well, that's the other point, right? So these tools have become more available, and they're mostly free, and they're easier to use, and there's a dark side to all that, right? Some folks don't choose to use their powers for good.
Right.
Right.
That's right. So, and that's kind of what I mean. There's a direct impact on things like health.
Right.
And climate change, which is a global issue. It's probably the biggest threat.
Probably the
facing
biggest
us.
Issue.
Right. And well, like you said, there's certain things we're going to go through, all the moon landings or vaccines. We're getting back over that. Some of these things are going to be a little longer lasting. And it turns out your vote does fucking count.
Yeah, and I guess the point I'm making is that there are specific immediate things, and there's sort of a background hum.
Right.
And the background hum is important because it's basically based on people not understanding science or not thinking critically about the evidence they're presented.
Well, and that's kind of the point. Yeah, right, exactly. So even when something is manipulated, it seems to be we're at a place now where, like you said, people can't look at it rationally, and like you said, in the scientific sense, and say, like, wait a minute, that's not right. That's not correct.
That's right. And look, you know, I'm a scientist. I'm a critical thinker. All of that stuff. And yet I get bamboozled on occasion. I will see stuff on Twitter, and I don't check it as thoroughly as I should.
Right.
A couple of times I've retweeted stuff or whatever that turned out to be wrong, and I've had to apologize for it. But that's part of the process, right? Is admitting you're wrong and going, yeah, oops.
Sure.
And here's what I screwed up. I didn't look at the date on that article, or I didn't check to make sure that picture actually is what it said it is.
Right.
And so what I'm trying to do is basically say, A, everybody's fallible. And two, here are the tools you need to make sure that you don't make this same mistake. Mm-hmm. And that way we all learn from everybody's mistakes.
Well, you were looking for, like you said, the internet means so many different things now. It's really just a backbone empowering all these other things. Because the two things that have really changed more than anything that it's created are this connectivity and amplification, and how those two things go together to the point where, like you said, someone like you, who is so well-educated and well-versed and is a skeptic, can accidentally, you know, quickly, without triple checking resources that they're aware of and they know of and they trust, and then the power that has. But, right, but if you don't do it, not once in a while, but rarely, but it happens, everyone else that isn't well versed or hasn't even educated or embraced science in some other way or been taught rational thought or scientific skepticism. I mean, Jesus, you know, it's just like the foundations are not there, and that seems to be a big issue.
That's important, and I don't want to downplay that at all. But it's
no.
Also,
tell me it's wrong, please.
Well, no, it's not. But there's more to it. There's this tendency to cleave unto beliefs we already have. So it's no shock to anybody who follows me on social media that I'm a progressive. And so if somebody posts a claim that something happens that some Republican senator said this, I'm more likely to believe it in general than if it were something like, you know, this Republican senator wants to fight climate change.
Sure.
That's something I would be more skeptical about because there are two reasons for that. One is that, you know, we're tribal and we want to believe what our tribe believes.
Right.
Also experience. There just aren't that many GOP senators who are actually going to speak out about climate change in a scientific sense. They exist. They're out there. I'm not trying to overgeneralize. It's just an example. But the point is, it's very easy for your higher level brain functions to sort of give it up to the amygdala and let all those more basic instincts take over. And so it's True. Very easy to hit the retweet button when you're angry.
Right.
But, as opposed to checking it out, making sure it's right.
1,000%. But there's certain things, like you said, are built in that we cannot change. It's going to be very hard to change tribalism as much as it's almost getting out of control.
We have all the facts.
Yeah.
The facts are out there. There's almost literally nothing new I can tell you about climate change, except for some tendencies like sea level rise, carbon dioxide going sure. in the atmosphere, that sort of thing. When there's some new record or some change or some very small, or I should say, a very subtle effect that is now becoming more important, like hurricanes. The strongest hurricanes are getting stronger, for example. That's an effect of climate change. Those may be new, but all the basic facts are out there. So clearly, the problem is not simply saying, "Why, here are the facts."
Right.
If I just hand these to you, it's not. The issues now are not scientific; they are political and psychological.
Sure. All I mean is, like, there's certain endemic things in humans that we're going to have to program around if we're going to, try to rebuild these foundations in the smartest way, which is like people are going to be tribal, and we can't get around too much of that. And again, that's speaking to the conservative climate activists. You know, that was part of their point, is like they don't want to hear this from people like us. They're like,
that's exactly. They're
right. Like, just donate money and let us do our job. And we're just of the opinion now where we're just like, fine. Whatever the means are that gets us to the end.
Yeah,
great, sure. Like whatever helps us win over those folks. Sure. Great. That's fine. Like, we just have to accept that you're not going to turn these people into progressive liberals. That's just not going to happen. But if you,
that's correct.
And you're going to disagree on 59 other fucking things. But if you can get us to agree on that one thing in some way, Jesus, we might survive this thing. Maybe.
I agree. We're in the kind of the triage right. part of this now, where we have to analyze where we are and say, what is the most important thing? What is the thing I need to spend my time on? What is the thing we need to do to get, for example, this problem of global warming fixed? Now, Catherine Hayhoe, to bring her name up again, is
Love
a
it.
Climate scientist, a vocal climate scientist. Yep. She makes these wonderful videos called Global Weirding.
They're so great.
And I've first heard of her a couple of years ago, I guess. I don't remember exactly when. I've exchanged some emails with her. We've chatted back and forth. She also happens to be an evangelical Christian. Now, I don't know where she stands politically because she doesn't talk about politics.
Right.
She talks about climate change and she talks about her religious beliefs. And so she and I might disagree on a lot of things, but I'll tell you what we don't disagree on, and that is global warming and the climate change that's coming from it are a huge critical existential threat to not just humans, but to life all over this planet. And so, I'm not going to squabble with someone like her about politics or religion or anything like that. It's quite the contrary.
Right.
Like
Why?
You said, she can go into an evangelical church in rural Texas and they'll listen to her. And that's not even a place I could get my foot in the door.
Oh, God, no. I mean...
and so I love what she's doing and I support her 100%.
Right. It's like, how do we empower that as much as humanly possible?
Yeah, that's all we want.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the ways that America's, science fundamentals are suffering. Our international rankings, for whatever they're worth, are not wonderful. You know, math and science assessments, international math and science assessments show that we're... In the U.S., students are like right in the middle of the pack, behind like many other advanced nations.
Sure.
Alternative facts, Facebook drastically reduced work visas. Are any of those, or is something else, our biggest weakness?
Well, depending on what you mean weakness, that's a problem. If the Russian government can come in and manipulate
right.
Enough people in our population to sway the vote, they can put a, science-denying, racist, xenophobic, misogynist into the White House. I may have mentioned that earlier.
No, tell us more.
So, here we are. We have a handful of these folks who can be the gatekeepers of all of the actions that we need to take.
Right.
There's of the hundreds of things that, for example, Trump has done or his administration has done, although actually very little policy has been changed, it's had huge leverage.
Right.
And it's at the very least, even though a lot of the things he's trying to do, he can't get done because they're illegal or not constitutional, the climate is changing. Suddenly, Nazis aren't afraid to talk about their awful, awful thoughts. And we have, a Breitbart and Daily Caller and these terrible, quote unquote news sites that are misogynist, racist, just awful things being said there. And they're infiltrating the mainstream media. The mainstream media will not say that Trump lies. They won't say, this person is a white supremacist or things like that. And so I know that this doesn't sound like science, but it's
applicable though, because
people say science isn't political. It's like, that's baloney. Of course, science is political. It's done by people.
Right.
And when you have the fossil fuel companies coming in and buying politicians to deny the science. Sure. I mean, the guy's running the frickin' EPA as a climate change denier, and he's changing the rules to poison us, to make it easier for fracking waste to get into our water, for pollutants to get in our air, for chemical poisons to leach into our ground and our the water we drink. This is all political, and it's all science.
Right, and by the way,
it's all because we've been manipulated.
A little bit of it comes back to, there's certain scientists who still feel like science shouldn't be political, but it's like, we have to be done with that mindset because across the board, whether it's that side or the other, it, like you said, it's the people we put in the office who then nominate unelected officials to run the EPA or the Department of the Interior. I mean, it's affecting funding for the National Institutes of Health. You know, it's affecting funding for basic science in the country. And everybody goes, why do we fund basic science? And it's like, oh, you know what? You're right. Let's just... Forget it. We just won't do that. And let's look at all the different things that that affects. It's completely insane. But so to me, again, coming back to how you've tried to, you're at least as far as I can tell, and how I've always appreciated your take on this, which is like, science is awesome, and it starts with enthusiasm. And I don't think anybody's going to become a scientist or appreciate scientists or proactively vote for it or ask questions about it in a city council meeting or with someone who's running for their local district in Congress. That's not going to be the first question they ask unless they have at least, maybe not even a lifelong enthusiasm for science, but you can't become a scientist. You can't advocate for it. You can't embrace it unless it starts with an enthusiasm for it and then being inspired by it. And from that front, now that we've torn apart America's failed science fundamentals, what are our strengths? What are the things that we can build on in 2018 going forward to rewrite that so that, when your daughter, who's technically eligible to be president in 19 years, and my children who are a little further behind, so that it is a different atmosphere and a different environment, and hopefully sea level rise hasn't taken everything down at that point.
No.
What are our strengths? What can we build on, Phil?
Well, assuming that the current administration doesn't lead us down the path to the world catching on fire, whether through global warming or nuclear war.
Mm-hmm. Both very possible.
There are a lot of strengths. We do have an extremely strong scientific framework in this country between universities and research institutes and that sort of thing. We are producing a lot of scientists. We are producing a lot of great research. We have a very strong space agency.
We're sending a lot of those scientists back to their home countries as well.
Well, that's always been true. Even when I was in school, there were people coming from other countries to get their degree and then go back.
Yeah.
And maybe there's more now. I actually don't have any knowing about that. But we're still, and even if that's the case, we are still producing a lot of American science. And I don't mean it's, science that's only true to Americans. I mean, just Americans who are doing science.
Right, right.
We are doing better representing science, I think, on television. I wish there were more, there was more time spent talking about things like climate change on the news programs. It's mm-hmm. given how important an issue this is, it gets almost no time.
I know, so that, it's really
that's
wild.
That's a bad thing. But like I said, there are dedicated channels to science. Our storytelling has a lot more science in it. We talked about that too. The movies that we go to see that have science in them are doing a better job typically portraying science and scientists. That's crucial. It might be easy to poo-poo that and say, oh, it's just a movie. But in fact, that these are stories and humans relate to each other through stories. We are storytelling animals.
Oh yeah, there's no denying that.
And I don't want to downplay that. In fact, I think it's time to champion this.
Right.
And to say, yeah, you know, our greatest weaknesses and our greatest strengths are two sides of the same coin. They always have been. How we tell these stories can be used for, you know, good or evil.
Yeah, and you come back to, again, like Shuri in Black Panther, right? Some young girl is going to dress up as her for Halloween. If it's affordable, and now hopefully it is, maybe that kid gets a microscope, and you can say all you want. We don't know how much you can measure that, but that kid probably wasn't going to get a microscope right, for Christmas the year before, you know? And you have no idea what's going to come from that.
And we have a much better team of people getting the word out about science now than I think we ever have. When I was a kid, you didn't have a lot of huge names doing science communication. Carl Sagan, David Attenborough, mm-hmm. James Burke. They were all men. They were all white.
Yep.
Just having my friend Neil Tyson out there
sure.
is such a wonderful thing. And we're seeing more women doing this. And when you go to social media, you're seeing a lot more scientists communicating directly with the public. And Katie Mack is a cosmologist, an astrophysicist, theoretical cosmologist. You're talking about, you know, the sort of the highest plane of difficulty in science. And she has a ton of followers on Twitter. She has people listening to her when she says stuff. And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you see all these different things. And I could go on and on. Diane Cowan, who does Physics Girl. I think
she's
blanking on it for a second.
She's amazing. Yeah. I think it's The Physics Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Simone Gertz, who makes the Terrible Robots.
Right.
She just did a TED Talk. She's great. And just all these people doing these various channels of science communication may be our saviors. They may be the ones who are promoting science to younger folks. I mean, I used to be young, but I'm not anymore. You know, I'm getting up there and I'm part of this aging, middle-aged white guy cabal who's controlled everything forever.
Terrible people.
And now, yeah, basically. and now we're seeing younger people who don't look like me. And they're going to be able to get this message out to a lot more folks than I ever could.
Yeah, it's really impressive. It's exciting. And again, you hope that enthusiasm just starts to translate. I hate to say like more tangible,
right.
but translates into the institutions being reinforced and reinvented as they need to be wherever they need to be.
Yeah, you know, it's now that you say that, the terrible 8mm or whatever movies they used to show us when I was in school, and it, you know, that they make fun of, you know, on The Simpsons or whatever. Now we're going to watch a short film about zinc. and it was somebody talking like this the whole time,
right.
And it's you just wanted to go into a coma.
Yeah.
Now go on YouTube and look at Hank Green's videos, the Crash Course videos. I made a Crash Course series. Again, Diane Cowan, who's doing these the Physics Girl videos that she makes. I could go on and on and on naming these things. There's enthusiasm, there's passion, and there's joy. Joy, which is not something you really got a feeling for in the classroom or in documentaries or that kind of stuff when I was a kid. Now, it's an essential ingredient of making videos that are popular.
And that translates.
And that, to me, may be more hopeful than anything else I'm seeing.
Ugh.
I love that. So that's all those people. You've been
what about you?
You've been as established, you've those been around people. Since the actual Oregon Trail. What do you see as your role now in 2018 besides your fancy new newsletter and further going forward? I mean,
which you can get at badastronomy.substack.com.
Yep, going right in the show notes.
Okay.
Do you feel like the Grail Knight at the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade? Like you've been here forever, you're super tired, but you still got your sword ready. You know, what's the plan going forward?
Gosh, I hope not. That's actually an interesting analogy. Some wizened old person sitting in a cave waiting to be discovered and just waiting for the next arrogant bonehead to turn into a mummy.
Look, it was a great movie. The analogy wasn't perfect. Let's just roll with it.
No, but I kind of like that because that's not what I want to be, right?
Right.
I don't ever want to be irrelevant. I certainly don't want to be a gatekeeper, which that guy almost literally was in that movie.
Quite literally.
What do you want to be?
Back in the day, I don't want to use that phrase
necessarily,
but it's like when I was a kid, like that. But you know, when the web was starting and there was a new thing every day, I remember when I was, how old was I? I was pushing 40 working at Sonoma State University in California. And I was telling the undergrads about podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what's a podcast? And I'm like, oh, this is a really cool thing. It's like a radio show, but you can listen to whatever you want. And that's sort of been why I've been able to keep my head above the waters because talk about not mixing a metaphor, but having it mixed anyway.
No, let's do this.
I've kept my head above the water because I've been able to ride that wave.
Keep it going.
Remember, I write words for a living.
Yeah. This is going great.
But it's really been true. Whenever there was something new that would come along, I would either do it or be a part of it somehow, doing podcast interviews or streaming video. I used to do live Q&A. Mm-hmm. People could just, ask me a question about astronomy and I'd answer it the best I could live. That was fun. But that's been the way, right? Is doing a website, doing a blog, now I've got this newsletter, which cracks me up because newsletters were big in the early 2000s and then they kind of went away.
Making a comeback.
But now they're coming back. And I think I gave the wrong address. It's badastronomy.substack.com. You can find it. Just look up Bad Astronomy.
Oh yeah, it'll be in our notes.
There's a free version and a paid version. But anyway, that's a way for me. That fills a niche for me that I couldn't quite fill. For the blog, I want to do a little bit more in depth. You know, I want to write 800 words, 1,000 words on some topic.
Yeah.
But every now and again, there's and that might be investigating a Hubble image or a satellite mm-hmm. photograph of Mars or something. But every now and again, there's just a cool picture. You know, look, here's a volcano erupting from space, and the infrared view shows the vegetation getting eaten by the ash plume or whatever.
Sure.
And that might be 200 words.
Sure.
So this is a everything old is new again. So I can use this newsletter to do that. So I'm gonna try new things. Bring this up again, when Hank Green and his crew approached me and said, we want to do Crash Course Astronomy. Do you want to write it and host it? I wasn't really that up on what he was doing.
Right.
I knew about him and John. But then I looked into it and it's like, well, clearly this is the right thing to do. And now a couple of years later, it's got over 30 million views.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So, you know, I hope I'm not this desiccated, semi-corpse. waiting for people to come to me. I'm still getting out there and doing my thing. Now I'm consulting more on TV shows. I'm consulting for a show called Salvation on CBS.
Oh yeah.
I've got a couple of other hooks in the water, irons in the fire.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Keep it going.
Anymore.
Cards to be dealt.
Yes.
hot chocolates to be stirred.
Yep.
I don't know.
You got to stir it. Otherwise it gets chunky at the bottom.
But I'm just trying new things, trying new ways of branching out, because like I said, you can't just simply give people facts. There has to be a story. Yeah. There has to be a foot in their door,
yep.
Whatever their tribe is.
And that is the key.
Yeah. And so if I just keep trying new things and see what sticks, a lot of it doesn't, I've tried things that haven't worked and it's like, well, that was fun, but, a colossal waste of time. And now I'll go back to writing my blog. So you try new things and I want to get across the facts, but I want to get across the beauty of science and the natural world. I want to get across my passion for it. And again, the joy, because scientists dedicate their lives to this. And now it's not poo-pooed to show that joy, to wear it right on your sleeve and to show it to people. And I love that. I love that there are scientists out there now who are doing that, making their own videos, doing their own social media, and just being happy about it.
I mean, yeah, that's what moves you and grabs you, right? Is when you can tell, you know that what the person is talking about is, you know, they're so incredibly passionate about it. Otherwise, why are you affected?
Right. And that's, you know, again, it works on so many levels. Like, you have to start with getting people to give a shit. And there's plenty of people out there that do, but infecting them with the joy is the thing that's going to make them go out there and start conversations right at the bar with their friends, or start conversations with a representative in their city council meeting and saying, what's our water health like? You know, and those are two levels, but they're not going to have that unless they've got the joy and they feel empowered to do it by, like you said, the facts, but also the storytelling. Yeah. And that could be the particular person they're bringing it up with at the bar or at their water cooler at work. I don't know. People have water coolers?
I don't think that there's water coolers anymore. And, okay.
Got it.
Wow. All right.
You know, but it's also the reason they know to talk to their city council member or their state right representative. And this is part of the reason Congress is so fucking broken, is no one listens to their constituents. But the purpose of the House is more specific representation, to talk to understand and be able to translate and appropriate the message of their specific community and to apply the science to that. Because you're not going to go to your city council member and go off on climate change and how sea level rise is going to affect Miami. They don't fucking care. But they're going to care if you have a military base that employs right half a million people or something like that. And that's what's going to help move the needle. But they're not going to do that until they feel like they have the tools and the wind behind them. And I guess that's why folks like you are so important.
Yeah.
Sure.
Roll with it.
So am I. No,
when you end it with you know, praising me, I'm like, what am I going to say? Yes, of course, you're correct.
Yeah.
Okay, that, say nothing.
That's kind of a funny bind to be in. Agree with him and sound like an arrogant jerk, or disagree and sound like a falsely modest jerk.
There's got to be a middle ground there.
Yeah. No. Honestly, I do agree, and I think that you know, I've got my role to play, and it doesn't have to be just me anymore. And for a long right time, let me tell you, online,
that would have felt like.
I'm not going to say it was just me, but I was one of the few astronomers out there when the web was just starting out. Now, there's a lot of them, and that's good.
So good.
So I'm happy about it.
So Phil, let's say I'm young and empowered. I might not be a scientist.
Or ever
but,
become one.
You know, right, right. Well, maybe I would.
Okay.
But you know, I fucking love science. And you know, I'm progressive and I'm fired up about November, this November, 2018. But I want, you know, I want to express myself on a daily basis too.
What's my first step? How do I start to join and lead this new movement? You know, who am I following? Who am I getting engaged with online?
Oh, that's a really hard question because there's just so much, which is always kind of the problem, right? It's a fire hose of information. Right, yeah. One thing to do is to simply, you know, go into Google and type in scientists running for office in 2018.
Love that.
And there are a lot.
Yes, there are.
314 Action. Check out 314.
314 Action. Yep. Thank you. That's, yep. I was thinking 314. I couldn't think of their URL. Yep. Thank you for that.
Yep. That's all I got.
They have a pretty big list. I don't think their list is complete. I seem to remember a couple of people I've heard of running who weren't on it, but the point is you can start there.
Sure.
And I know you've interviewed Jess Phoenix, who's running for Congress in California's 25th
awesome
district.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a volcanologist. She's a, she's a real scientist running for office, yep, and there are more.
Yeah.
So that's one way to do it. And one of the beauties of this too is if you get on Twitter and you follow a handful of scientists, even if you were just simply to go on Twitter and follow me on there and then go to my Twitter page and look at who I follow, because mm-hmm, I have scientists I follow. I have climate scientists I follow. That is it's what we call a condensation nucleus in science. Uh-oh. It is a nugget of information upon which more things can condense. It's actually a term that's like dust in the atmosphere that water vapor can condense on and form a raindrop. And so in this case, it's an information nucleus. If you can find one person who has information about other people, then your footprint grows very rapidly. And you can find out more and more about who's running and what the issues are and what you can do.
Well, like you said, it's a fire hose, but why not curate your fire hose, you know, a little bit through these resources like that?
Yeah, I do. And I have, you know, I have a, when I read Twitter, I have different columns. I use an app and I have different feeds for, you know, personal friends versus people I just follow for information and that sort of thing. And you can do that with science. You can do it with climate science. You can do it with astronomy. You can do it with the science of politics and the politics of science.
Right. And by the way, there, like, it can seem like we're advocating to build a bubble, you know, which is curate your news information sources. But one, my issue with this is always like people have done this for eternity. You know, you listen to your tribe and that's where you get your news from. Yes, yeah. It's much worse than it ever was before. But two, we're not asking you to do that. We're asking you to become better informed. And again, if it...
Yeah, our bubble is based on reality.
Right. And again, like, look at... use the magical Catherine Hayhoe as an example. The number of things we disagree on are probably large and wide. But on this thing, there's nobody better to listen to. You know?
That's right.
She is going to lead us on the path where we can actually have a conversation about that other stuff later, maybe. But right now, everything else is going dark. So once people have done that, what do you feel like are steps that our listeners should be asking of their representatives once they're actually following these people, whether it's tweeting at them online or attending a meeting or anything like that?
Well, all of that. In fact, I haven't seen it as strongly now as I did a year ago, but when Congress was basically sabotaging things left and right, there were campaigns online, especially on Twitter, to organize people to call their senators and Congress folks to, you know, here's a script. You don't have to follow for word, but, you know, here's, and there are sites like...
I don't know if this is what you're thinking of, but fivecalls.org does a fantastic job.
Thank you.
There's literally
That's
an
the one
app.
I was thinking of.
I mean, it couldn't be, couldn't require less effort.
Right.
That's right.
And
fivecalls.org. And it basically says, you know, are you interested in these issues?
Yeah, right.
What's your zip code? Here are the folks you need to call.
Press,
here's a script.
Smash this button with your fat finger. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, basically it. And so that's important. In my case, in Colorado, I have a moderately progressive Democratic senator and a far right senator. And so the thing is, you know, one will always do the thing I agree with, and one will always do whatever he can to destroy the planet. So it's hard. But there are swing states. There are, you know, some moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats who can be swayed.
Right.
A lot of them aren't having town halls and they aren't doing public meetings, but you can call them.
Sure.
You can email them. Sure. You can, God knows, you can fax them. Some of them you have to actually
still fax.
Sweet Jesus, Phil.
E-fax.
Wow.
I know, it's true. But that's important. And you don't have to go to the top. Like you said, go to your city council meetings. The school boards, I've been hearing about attacks on the school boards as much as I did during the Bush era, especially when Texas was putting creationists, was stacking the state school board with creationists.
Well, I mean, one of the conversations we had was with, I think we mentioned with Don Dugenhaus and a couple kids out there, Therese and Jay, you know, they dealt with the Idaho issue a couple months ago. And manage.
It's in a lot of states.
Yeah.
Right. Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Louisiana are the worst. And in the case of Texas, they have so many students, they can actually sway the textbook industry.
Right.
And so in the 90s, that was the 2000s, I mean, that was a big deal. So anything like that, you know, they say all politics is local. And what they mean is, it really is. These folks who are senators, Congress critters, all of these folks, they started. It was town council, city council, state legislature. And that's where a lot of these rules are being made. And that has a lot of sway on federal and global politics. So get involved.
Get involved is like the major theme always.
Right.
All right. So, Phil, we're getting pretty close to time here. We cannot thank you enough for being here and chatting with us today.
So great.
We would love to
thank you for letting me soapbox for so long.
Yeah, no, please.
Oh, my God. Yeah, thank you. Who else should we talk to if you want to suggest anybody? I mean, you've already mentioned a bunch of people.
Across the spectrum.
Yeah, yeah.
For what topics?
Anything. And basically, again, our focus is, and this was kind of a different episode because it's a little more philosophical, but the topic is like, is it an existential-ish thing that is either affecting our listeners now or will in the next 5 to 20 years? That either they know about or they don't know about. Again, could be positive and crazy like CRISPR, or it could be less good. you know, so any of those things that, that will help, again, like we kind of have today, we can develop some action around to empower to, for people to go out there and
light
and kick
a little
some
fire
tires.
under our asses.
Right.
Yeah. The reason I asked is because, you know, I was curious if you meant, did you mean astronomy? Do you mean politics? Do you mean climate
change?
We'll
take any of it. And again, you know, it's funny. And I would love to talk to you a little bit about this. It is, you know, we don't catch shit, but sometimes space is the one where everyone's like, I know space is cool and sci-fi. And it's like, yes. However, we need a redundancy plan and we should be developing it simultaneously while we try to save this particular rock in space. So that's something, you know, we're going to talk to some folks from JPL about, you know, insight and about, the fucking helicopter they just announced. And
yes.
People are like, oh, do we really need that? It's like, well, yeah, we need to figure out why Mars went wrong. And also if we can live there,
right.
Which seems insane, but again, it's not going so well here.
That's a whole thing right now. There's a whole topic about the idea of colonization and how we need to rethink the idea of you know, quote unquote, colonizing another planet. And I agree with that. It's the wrong mindset. We need to be thinking about exploration. But you know, be that as it may, depending on what you want to talk about, the thing I always tell people is go to my Twitter page. Go to twitter.com/badastronomer. Click on my lists. Mm-hmm. I have five lists. A couple of them are locked because they're just like personal things. But I have one called Sciency Folks. And those are going to be
very technical
people
sounding.
Sometimes what you see is what you get. And when you think about it, it's like these are people who are promoting science on Twitter. So right away, they're going to be the kind of people you're going to want to talk about.
Sure.
They're going to be the folks who are passionate about getting the word out. And I've got another one called Climate Folks, and these are going to be climate scientists. And I'm sure you've already talked to a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
I know you talked to Jess Phoenix. You said you've got Catherine Ahale on your list. My advice, and this is something I've been getting more and more passionate about over the past few years, is I have this ridiculously big platform on Twitter because, like I said, I've always been sort of riding the wave. I've always been kind of on the forefront of whatever's working on social media.
Sure.
So over the years, it's built an audience far beyond what I would have ever expected. But the beauty of this is that now I have a voice. I have a megaphone,
sure.
a soapbox.
Sure.
And if I can hand that megaphone to somebody else who has a different viewpoint than mine, I've learned so much from people who aren't white, who aren't men,
sure.
who aren't cisgendered, whatever terms, whatever sort of Venn diagrams you want to put me in. And that's really helped me understand a lot more. Sometimes I agree and sometimes I don't, but it's the beauty of it is that I understand their viewpoints better.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could, even if we don't agree with other people, if we can understand where they're coming from, that helps a lot. So, you know, go to my list, look at these people.
Awesome.
Look at ones who don't look like me. And, you know, I don't need to give you anybody specific. You probably know all the same folks I do, but just looking down those lists, you'll see the people you need to talk to
awesome.
And whose voices need to be amplified.
Awesome. Well, we will do that. And again, to summarize, what our listeners and progressive and just people of action, if you're not progressive, can do to do that. Like you said, get involved in some way, follow those sciencey folks, follow folks like Phil. And like you said, definitely follow people that don't look like him and don't sound like him. And aren't as old or have different perspectives or live in different parts of the world. Please vote. You know, and
vote.
This is the thing. You know, all statistics about how many young people turned out in 2016, and whether they will this year after all the organizing and everything that's happened from gun control to science to women's rights and civil rights, and you hope so. And there's actually been a ton, a bit has reversed course on automatic voter registration, which is amazing and should happen everywhere. And that's great news, but those people also have to go and vote. And so please do that. Spend the next 6 months empowering yourself so you understand what your candidate is for and what they're against and how that affects your neighborhood and your city and county and your state and your country and the planet, because we are all connected. For a lot of these topics, we're all in it together, man. So do that. And even if you don't love science, just be informed, because that can help you understand when you're being manipulated and
right.
and led astray.
That was perfect.
Could you? I'm just going to take that recording of you saying that was perfect and just just play it whenever my wife yells at me.
Not an endorsement.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. So, Phil, we have a few last questions that we like to ask everybody, sort of a lightning round, if that sounds cool.
Okay.
Ruby, so, number one, when was the first time in your life that you realized you had the power of change, or the power to do something meaningful?
There wasn't a moment. It was more of a dawning realization, pretty much around the time of the Moon Hoax TV show that Fox put on TV, when I debunked it in a timely fashion, like the day after it went up. That's a whole story. I started getting tons of email, hundreds and maybe even more than 1,000 emails from people thanking me or arguing with me or whatever. And I mm-hmm. realized, you know, this thing that I'm just like hammering away on my keyboard in my underwear at home mm-hmm. actually is impacting people's lives.
Right.
And over the years, you know, it's easy to forget that, because I'm still sitting at home in my, well, now I have my Captain America pajamas I wear.
Yes.
Sure.
Still having, it's good to be reminded every now and again. It's like, I get email from people who say, I saw you on this, or I saw something you wrote, and it really opened my eyes about this topic that I'm now thinking about, and nothing makes me happier.
Did that terrify you at all, knowing you had that power?
No, because I'm awesome.
Sure. Got it. Check.
Yeah. And happily, I'm always right. No, it's a responsibility. It really is. And I try to take it seriously.
Sure.
I mean, I not 100% seriously. I still joke and snark and be sarcastic and all that, but it's important.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
And of course, joking is part of that. If you go into my Instagram feed, it's almost never about science. It's mostly about my goats.
Right.
So there you go.
I love goats.
Yep.
All right. Number two, Phil, how do you consume the news?
Through the internet, like almost every other human my age and younger. I used to watch the local news a lot in grad school and that sort of thing. It was the only way to get the weather.
Sure.
But now it's mostly through links from mostly Twitter. I hate Facebook and I try not to use it anymore. But I try to get that information from people who don't necessarily agree with me or think like me, so that I can try to get the news from different viewpoints. But that's mostly how I get it. And that sounds terrible, because we always say, you know, 92% of the people get their news from viral crap on Facebook.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, just be critical about it.
Sure.
And look into it.
You know? Yeah.
Right. Like you said,
people I trust and people I don't.
Right. Yeah. Well, like you said, make sure your bubble's based in reality.
Yeah. And I can tell you there's a bunch of people on Twitter that when somebody quotes them, it's like, it's not that I trust this person. In fact, I do. I trust them to be wrong all the time. You know, I follow the House Science Committee right now.
Oh,
and,
God.
And they are as Orwellian. Their tweets are as or just
it's unreal.
Maybe not Stalin era, but ish. It's certainly there's a lot of Orwell and Joseph McCarthy going on and ish. Yeah. So, you know, I follow them because I know that anything they say is not only going to be wrong, but it's going to be purposely misleading.
Well, and it's incredible because it just makes you go like, wow, that's the official feed. That's not some like crockpot in the bathroom after a meeting tweeting in the stall. It's like, oh, man, that got to
So that's so I try to get my news that way, but I try to, you know, think about it carefully.
Right. Yeah. All right, Phil.
Last one.
Number three here. If you could Amazon Prime one book to Donald Trump, what would it be?
It doesn't matter because he doesn't read.
You know, so a lot of people said that, and my answer is imagine someone reading it to him.
Yeah, that's right. It'd have to be a cartoon book.
Sure, right.
We've gotten that answer before.
It's not okay. And to just to beat this thing to death because I overanalyze everything. Assuming he would read it, and assuming it would have an impact on him. It would probably be Michael Mann and Tom Tolles. He's got a bunch of them. One of them's called The Madhouse Effect.
The Madhouse,
and it's about climate change, and it's got editorial cartoons in it by Tom Tolles. Just a description of the attack on climate change that's been going on, and Michael Mann has been the epicenter of a lot of this for many.
He's amazing. Yeah, he co-wrote a children's book with this wonderful female author we had on the podcast. Megan Herbert from Australia.
It's so good.
It's such a great kid's book.
Yeah, I've got that one. I haven't read it yet. I've just got a pile of books to get to. Yeah. His stuff is good.
Good news is it'll take about 10
climate
minutes.
Wars and-
but it's great. And he's obviously, you know, at the forefront of all this. Last one, because we haven't let you do this at all, but please tell us something awesome about space that will distract us from the entire rest of our day.
Best question ever.
There's so much.
What's something new this week where you're just like, holy shit, people should know about this?
It's not something new.
Okay, great.
But something that still makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up every now and again when I think about it, is that when I was a kid, there were 9 planets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then there were 8. Mm-hmm. And I could we could do a whole talk about putting labels on stuff that don't need labels.
Right.
But for the past more century or more, we've been looking for planets around other stars,
right,
and our technology wasn't up to it. And then almost overnight in the 1990s, that changed.
Right.
And we started discovering planets. Now we have...
Tell us how many there are.
Well, we've discovered thousands. There are about 3,000 confirmed planets known orbiting other stars. Mm-hmm. Extrapolating from that, because we haven't looked at every single star.
Right.
We've looked at a sample.
Right.
And you say, well, we've looked at this many stars, and there are this many stars in the galaxy.
Right.
So if we multiply the number of planets we found by how many planets are probably out there, I mean, by the number of stars that are out there, the number of planets you get probably outnumbers stars in the galaxy. So there are 200 billion stars, maybe, in the Milky Way, and that's just our galaxy, 200 billion stars. There are probably more planets than that.
Sure.
Not every star has planets, but most of them have multiple planets, like the sun does.
Right.
And so there are, you know, hundreds of billions, maybe trillions of planets in our galaxy alone.
It's incredible to me. I wrote a whole personal blog post a few years ago about the great filter question. And that shit just blows my mind all the time. It's incredible. And I don't know the answer, whether we're beyond the great...
I have my ideas.
The great, whether we're approaching the great filter at reckless speed, or whether we're past it, or... never going to see, or whether it exists, or whether there's other life out there, but just the numbers. And this is why I'm just, every time the James Webb telescope gets delayed, I cry a little bit. Just because what that thing could find is just incredible.
I did work on it when it was still just on paper.
Wow.
So yeah. I've been waiting a long time to see this thing get launched.
Man, Phil, this has been so great. Where can our listeners follow you online?
Everywhere.
All the places.
You can look up Bad Astronomy Blog. It's hosted on sci-fi.com, SYFY.com. My newsletter is badastronomy.substack.com. I'm on Twitter as Bad Astronomer. Instagram, I think it's maybe just Bad Astronomer. I can't remember now. If you go to about.me/PhilPlate, I have all of my social media linked there.
Awesome. Awesome. Perfect. Well, Phil, can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for your time today.
So
and
much.
All you have done and will continue to do out there. We just pray you just keep kicking ass out there.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure, man.
Well, thank you for helping amplify my voice so I can amplify others as well.
For sure, man. That's the least folks can do in this, the most
we
important,
have to do.
Most important year of our lives. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Phil. And hopefully we'll talk to you again soon, man.
All right, thank
you. Take it easy.
Take it easy. Thanks to our incredible guest today, and thanks to all of you for tuning in. We hope this episode has made your commute or awesome workout or dishwashing or fucking dog walking late at night that much more pleasant. As a reminder, please subscribe to our free email newsletter at importantnotimportant.com. It is all the news most vital to our survival as a species.
And you can follow us all over the internet. You can find us on Twitter at ImportantNotImp.
Just
so weird. Also on Facebook and Instagram at ImportantNotImportant. Pinterest and Tumblr, the same thing. So check us out, follow us, share us, like us. You know the deal. And please subscribe to our show wherever you listen to things like this. And if you're really fucking awesome, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Keep the lights on. Thanks.
Please.
And you can find the show notes from today right in your little podcast player and at our website, importantnotimportant.com.
Thanks to the very awesome Tim Blaine for our jamming music, to all of you for listening, and finally, most importantly, to our moms for making us. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.